everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I am your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, we have a very special guest, one Chuck Ellsworth. Hello, Chuck.
Did you really just call me Ellsworth out of fun, or out of the fact that you forgot it's Ellswick?
No, it's totally because it's out of fun.
The worst part is, that ain't the first time I've ever been called Ellsworth.
I got close enough. It's like horseshoes.
Yeah, we just got rid of some letters and put some other ones in place.
Sure. So for those who don't know you, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Well, I am Chuck Ellswick.
Have you ever considered changing your name to Ellsworth? I hear it's a lovely name.
I think back in 2000 maybe, when a hall monitor, I was wearing a football jersey for high school and it said Ellsworth ran it back. He still called me Ellsworth. I think that was a time I thought about it. I think when my football coach also called me Elwood, that was another time of just thinking of changing it. But no, I haven't really ever thought about changing it. Because okay. I have as much street cred from, you know, the mean streets of Detroit, or in my case, just Metro Detroit area, since I don't live actually in Detroit. I've been playing since 2006, 2007. Granted, played it from like when it first came out, the game, and then nobody around us carried any models, so that went on hiatus until near the end of Escalation. Got a wife, got a kid, got all those, you know, things that we call dependents.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what else to say about me. I think I can go on and on with that, my ADD. That would just keep going and going, and then 2 hours would be gone and past.
So I guess a few things that I'll highlight that I know from about you is that, first of all, somewhat recently, you can fill me in with when, I guess, but you've joined the Infernals team for Privateer Press. Is that correct?
Yep, that was about a couple of years ago. Right before, I'll say a couple months before the CID process first occurred. So what was that, 2017, maybe?
Okay.
I would want to say it was about October, November of 2016 or 2017. And that was just on that whim of, I think a couple of the Infernals had started going away or had started moving on to other parts of their lives. And I know Travis was doing a lot of work, and he had mentioned that I'd been interested, and Mr. Jack Coleman had thought it'd be a good idea too. So I don't know what they were thinking that day, but shortly after that, I think I can actually remember the date. I don't want to say it was like October 25th or 27th, because it was right around my birthday for some reason that it occurred. And then ever since then, been doing that, or at least attempting to do that.
So what's it, I guess, what's it like being an Infernal? What sort of stuff do they have you help with?
Sometimes the main stuff it comes down to is whenever you start seeing, as this rule interaction, first of all, is it intended? Is it something that developers are wanting it to go this way or that way? Then you start seeing when there's rule interactions about how is it going to affect this when we already have a ruling for this. I know one of the big discussions, for example, that had come up was during one of the CID process recently about would one of the Archons stop, you know, summoning and placement. And we had already said that this placing shouldn't be done because, well, technically Colossals can't be placed, so you wouldn't ever be able to deploy them. And that's a ruling that goes before my time, where then it came up, well, wait a minute, we want this to be able to stop certain things, but at the same time, we can't have it stop an old ruling or interaction, which is why you now see the one Archon saying, all right, well, you cannot summon within its command, not you cannot place within its command.
Okay, interesting.
So just little things where it comes to that, and then other discussions where we have of, is this the way we want to go? What are the actual interactions if this counts as an attack, or if this doesn't, or how, which way, if this goes, this ruling goes this way, what's going to happen then with these other interactions we've already stated?
So one other thing that I would say from knowing you and having a history with you is that you're one of the American players who's been playing a long time, who's been competitive. And one of the things you're kind of famous for is playing a lot of different lists and a lot of basically whatever you're wanting to, not net lists or whatever. It's, you are a lot of times famous for playing unloved models.
Oh, there's some that I have just because I liked how they look. And then it became, well, I've now built these, I've painted them, and now they have to get on the table at some point, and whether that's going to work out or not. To be honest, I didn't even own, what was it? Back in Mark One, I didn't even own Doom Reavers because I didn't like about two or three of the poses they had. Like, out of that entire set, there's one model I like how he's posed. Not the one that looks like he's golfing or just holding the sword out to his side. So I never even owned those until the end of Mark One, just because, like, well, close to owning everything for Cawdor at this point. They're the only thing I don't own. I guess I'll get them and try them out, start using them. So it's not even ever been a matter of I want something because of what it can do on the board, just whether I like the story behind it, whether I like how the model looks. And all my paint skill doesn't really prove how I can make the model look, but in general, I at least like to pretend that they look all right.
And so you've played a lot competitively in War Machine. Mostly you've attended events that are in kind of the Midwest area of America. But you've had a history of success at various events. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was gonna say, yeah, it's very hard with, I mean, I'm about to say it's hard getting time off when I'm a teacher, but
right, yeah.
I mean, we don't get too many sick or paid days off during the school year. So during the summer, I can usually do a lot more traveling for it. And it always seems like a lot of the Midwest ones are during that time period. Or I know a couple of our guys from around there, even within an hour drive, they'll sometimes want to go into Canada. And they're like, oh, we're going here. It's only a 3-4 hour trip. I'm like, you know, I don't feel like spending that much time driving on the weekend when I just got done working all week. So that's usually only... just time, and you know, you have a kid and have a wife and don't want to be away from them too much either.
Fair enough. So part of the reason why we're having you on is because most recently you went to Gen Con and you won both the Masters event and the Champions event.
I know, I'm just as surprised as you are too.
So we, real quick, we can talk a little bit about the format of the meta. We try to get on people who have had recent success with a faction or faction champions, and we'll interview them. Part A that we're going to do is we try to have each half of the episode be about 45 minutes long, and there's a Part A and B. Part A is free up on the Muse on Mini site and on Patreon, and then Part B you can listen to by backing us on Patreon for $1. But another backer level is $2, and with that one, you can join our Patreon Discord channel and submit questions that we've asked to the guest. And so, to start off, we're going to be asking you questions from the $2 Patreon backers who wanted to delve into your expertise.
Oh. Well, if you lose some money on this one, Jason, I'm just going to apologize right away and hope that you don't hold that against me.
I will not. So, first question is from Joe G. He says, my question, Chuck seems to maximize value out of whatever models he feels like playing with. What are some of the ways he goes about getting the most out of models that others have overlooked?
I don't know. I think for that, so... I know there's been times, or I know you and I were talking earlier, because I saw some of the list up on your site and thought, hey, I didn't have Exemplar Bastion Seneschal in there. I had the normal Knight's Exemplar one, just my really bad hand rank came for it. And I think it was in the semis for Masters. I was playing one of the guys, I was spreading that, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, you know what? I can take this Exemplar Seneschal and just put him on this flag here. Unless he comes to contest it, he actually can't kill this model in this game. He can kill it, but it's going to be there until my next turn, so I'm going to at least score a point
right for
there. I have a couple of buddies that play Protector. I don't ever really see one of them use it every now and then, but I don't really see a whole lot of people using them anymore. And I can still remember the time where those used to be a big model a lot of people chose.
Right, yeah.
And it's just... it was just one of those things. I've always liked it. It can always do a lot of good damage output. And it just became one of those models I thought, well, hey, in this new Theme Force thing, and as well as before, it's free. So why not take it? The only other models that are coming out that cost more than him, and that Theme Force for me was Severia Zero, or one of them I already have them. So I might as well spend my points on another one. On a another mile, that's 5 points. I don't even know if that actually answered the question or not, but
I guess I kind of just look
and see what I can try to get out of what this model does and what's its purpose for me to do. Sure, I know the big one would be, of course, because I kept hearing it from Isaiah on our way back about the Revelator. I think the fun one I remember reading from somebody's post was, why does he have a Revelator? Oh, Lilith 3 is pretty hot right now, so that's probably why he has it, because the magical guns. And then the guy's next, not the guy, but someone else's post under it was, it has magical guns? When really, in like, for my example, the Kreos list I have, the Revelator is there for those stealth warcaster or warlocks.
Right.
After Kreos has already knocked them down, and instead of taking, all right, I could take a Reckoner, I could take Rovan and Company, and that's about 12 points cheaper. But you really at times have Rovan and Company who might not be doing a whole lot during the game. Where the Revelator at least can either get in the melee, it can shoot things. One of the games I played this weekend, somebody had a bunch of Dreadrots in front of the Naslayers. Naslayers did all fall down and all that. And I'm like, I'll just shoot these couple Dreadrots in front of them with these big guns. And now these Naslayers can't even charge me without going through the fire and die. So I guess that would be kind of the looking to see what can I get out of value. And I usually half the time don't think about stuff when I build the list until I see what the matchup's going to be.
I think one of the things I've noticed, and I guess I'd be curious on your opinion with that, but it's a little bit different with the limited factions, where it feels like they have a smaller number of models, and a lot of times, if you take like Infernals, Crucible Guard, etc., it's a small list of models, and there isn't too much that you would necessarily consider dead weight. But if you start looking at some of the older factions, like you just played, you just played Protectorate, and especially if you look at like Signar, Protectorate, Kador, Krix, those are old factions that have a huge amount of models in them. And there's a lot of times where even it's not necessarily groupthink or whatever, but I catch myself sometimes, I'll kind of categorize myself or categorize models and put them as like, I think this is a bad model or not good at its point in cost or whatever. And I think that sometimes if you are so busy like labeling models as good or bad, then you're missing kind of what you talked about, where sometimes it's about what situations is this model good at. And if you've approached it with kind of a closed mind approach, then you're just going to kind of naturally ignore the models that have the bad label, instead of thinking of, okay, I'm working on this matchup, or I'm trying to do this thing with a list, and instead of doing Adjudicator and Rovan, I'm going to do the Revelator instead, as per your example.
Yeah, and I mean, I do have Adjudicator in there in that Kreos list, but it became, for the Malekith list for Champions, there was no Adjudicator at all. Just because at the same time it becomes, well, I know a question somebody had asked Isaiah, that asked me then, was like, well, why a Reckoner? Well, a Reckoner can run 10 inches and shoot 12 away on an open fire shot after you've maybe scourged them already. So you don't really, that range is better than maybe something else. I just didn't have, I said, it just became for Malekith and Kreos the idea. I know him and I were joking about, why do you ever play this or this? When we were talking about just some of these things I haven't played, I don't know how long, but that also comes with when you own every faction to close to every model in the game, and multiples of it becomes, well, I definitely want to play this or this because I haven't played this model in a while, or I haven't played this one. Usually our local game nights, it's more about which one of us has just finished building or painting something. We look at each other's list, is like, oh, this must be what you just finished painting recently. Oh yeah, I can see it now.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and move on to the next question then. So this question is from Dr. Glenn. He says, Did you plan your list knowing that Gen Con seems to be more lightly attended than other big cons? And just as a bit of preface for those who aren't aware about this with Gen Con, but Gen Con is an enormous con. It has usually around 60,000 attendees. And one of the things that's weird about Gen Con is that once upon a time, before Lock and Load, it was kind of the championship event for War Machine was at Gen Con, and it was kind of a premier event. And as time's gone on, things have changed. The number of people who attend the Gen Con War Machine events has gone down some. And the thing that's interesting is that a lot of times the people who are playing there there's a lot of good players there. And so it's kind of a smaller event that has some pretty good players. Like this year, there was you, Aaron Well, Jason Watt, you know, et cetera, which when you're looking at, you know, a 16 to 20 man event is kind of interesting that it's kind of rare to see an event that's that small have that many good players in it.
Yeah. And of course, let's see, for champions, had to play Watt in the finals, had to play Aaron Whale in the semi or the round right before it. And then for the finals of Masters, the second day, because first day, when did shopping, not just at the privateer booth, but putting in mind, we went and got some of our board games we want to do. I usually go and try to find some of the artwork over at that's like fairy base because the wife likes that.
Uh-huh.
Then go over and look at minifigs or these little gems because my son's 6 years old and he wants pirate coins and gems and all these rubies, and you got to try and find that. So really, Thursday was our shopping, walking, seeing the entire vendor hall. And then we have usually the last couple of years we've done role play at some like just one-off adventure, one shot. And then, so Isaiah and I went there on Thursday from 4 to 8. So, I mean, Friday was the only day I was attempting to qualify for Masters. And that included playing Watt round one.
Yeah.
So yeah. I kind of see what you're saying when it comes to the...
Another example of a really good player. So Ben Beckman won Lock and Load Masters, and he was playing in some of the events at Gen Con as well.
Yep, he played, if I remember from what everyone was talking about, he played day one, lost to Aaron.
Yeah.
So Aaron qualified for Sunday. So Ben and Aaron are both playing again first round of the Masters day two qualifier while I'm playing Watt. The four of us are just there like, all right, it's going to be a quick day for a couple of us now.
Yeah, Ben actually qualified in the second heat for Masters, but wasn't able to attend on Sunday. So,
and I think that's kind of like what you were saying, where it's like, all right, so just like the person who asked this, where it's a smaller one, you don't go to Gen Con just to play War Machine. You go to Gen Con to be at Gen Con. There are so many different types of board, card, even video games. There's everything there. I've even picked up when a bunch of us wanted to do, what was it, Silver Sentinels maybe? And I was able to find like all four books for $25.
Right,
so you can get good deals. It's just, to me, I'm like exactly what you said, where it's a smaller field, but if you're going to have a bunch or a few here and there good players, you are going to have to play them at some point.
Right, yeah. It is, so I do enjoy Gen Con a lot. There's a certain energy there that you don't really get anywhere else. I will have the caveat of like, if large crowds are an issue for you, then I would assume that instead of being energized, it could be very much more of a negative experience. But the vendor hall, all the different events, etc. I do love Gen Con a lot. But I guess to come back to the question, when prepping for an event that you're expecting it to be a smaller event, does that affect your list creation at all?
No, not at all. Okay. It just, again, just what I want to play, or what I feel like I'm going to play, or what I haven't played in a while. I do keep on my tablet, one of my obsessions, I guess, is all a track record of all of my games through Iron Grudge. So sometimes I'll look back through that, see, hey, when was the last time I took this faction to a con? Or when was the last time I played this Warcaster or Warlock? And that'll sometimes, I guess, help me choose who I'm taking to where. I think for Michigan GT, I've decided Circle, and that's mainly because the last time I played Circle for a con was War Machine Weekend, maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next question. So this is from Screaming Demon. He says, does Chuck pick his list based on aesthetic or theme? Is there a playstyle you're looking for in lists that tend to be so unconventional they border on randomly selected?
I think I might have to hear that first part of that question again.
Sure, yeah. do you pick lists based on aesthetic or theme?
Yeah, I think so very much. So we were... As we were talking a little bit here when it came, why, after the new themes released for Oblivion, why ever play your Warjack-based army you want to do in Creator's Might over doing it just in Exemplar?
Right.
Because Exemplar, your melee weapons for your Warjacks get blessed.
Right.
So why would you ever want to play that in a theme force that doesn't give a benefit to your Warjacks? And it really came down to, I'm like, well, you know, I kind of like it just out of the fact that you still have that, I guess maybe nostalgia would be the word of, hey, I know this is the Warjack theme for how long now? Should probably play that. And then it really came down like, well, I kind of want Tristan and Fortify. You can't take him in Exemplar, so I guess we'll be doing it this way.
Right.
And then sometimes some things are just, they are just random, just because I can now picture putting in my war room in a couple days ago, almost every mercenary solo from Riot Quest that just came out, so I can go, hey, here's my Riot Quest list, just so I can use them all. So, I mean, it's random, but it's also, hey, my new toys are going to be painted at one point. I got to use them.
Fair enough. So we have a couple more humorous questions from Joe G. He says, if you were a hot dog and were starving, would you eat yourself?
Yes.
I would expect nothing less of you, Charles.
I mean, if you think about it, I'm not going to be hungry anymore. And at this point, if I'm a hot dog, how good is my life at this point? It needs to just come to an end at that.
For the real hard-hitting question from Joe G, though, is fuck, marry, kill. You have to categorize these three casters. Resnik 2, Vlad 2, and Terminus.
I got to fuck one of these things. I got to marry one of them, and I got to kill the other.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Those three again were?
Resnik 2, Vlad 2, and Terminus.
Okay. Think you got to kill Terminus. Think you kind of got to fuck Vlad, because I think at least if you then say you're fucking Resnik, something bad's happening and it's involving Iraq. And I'm not into that rough stuff like that. I mean, occasional smack on the ass might do it, but, you know, not really being racked. So I guess you got to marry him just out of the pure effect of, if he tries to do something, you can at least do, you know, call and report spousal abuse, right?
Yeah, well, and I'm not sure that Resnik would be down for the premarital action, so it's probably a good idea to marry him.
So I'm just I don't know if I'm putting enough thought into this, though. I'm probably going to lose a little bit of sleep tonight just thinking about, like, did I say the right one? Like, this is the question of all of them that I'm going to be pondering later.
I'm a little hurt that you just automatically went for kill on Terminus.
Well, I mean, if anything, too, I mean, if everyone just says random, maybe how I pick stuff, this might be how I get, like, my next three lists I decide to try and play now. I might
Excellent.
These three, or at a con, take one of these three. And I'm like, how'd you decide? Well, somebody asked about fuck, marry, kill, and well, this is it. One of them was those three. Which one was it? You're just gonna have to find that out for yourself later.
All right, so we're on to a series of questions now from Cutter, New York City. He says, question one: what are Chuck's views on the meta as it currently stands? What's prominent? What's lagging? And what ideas are emerging?
This ain't going to be a good answer, but I mean, I'll be honest, whenever someone talks about the meta or how's it going or where's the shift, I even go, what is it? I myself ask, what is the meta? Where is this?
It's an amazing podcast. That's what the meta is, Chuck.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's how I know it as. I really just look at it like, I don't know, maybe at the same time I thought, oh, you hear about Devourer Host, or you hear about this new theme come out. Or if any of you got to play against Infernals this last weekend at Gen Con, you'd realize that it's pretty hard at times to keep up with their attrition. You might say, oh, they're only armor this, and they're 24 boxes. When somebody's summoning four or five of those throughout the game, then you're kind of looking at like, so in the Champions one, for people who don't know, I scored 180 points off of the Infernal player in the one game.
Yeah, but that was just like, it was like you're in a penny arcade clicking the free points box.
You could for Champions, it was great, but for anything else, you're kind of like, well, this is eating a lot of my clock right now. having to deal with something that you can't not. And I mean, I never even thought of that before. I mean, I might think about it now next time, but that's not, I guess, to me, looking at the meta and where it's at. To me, it's more looking at just what this list or this faction's about to do, and then trying to decide what I need to focus on during the game. If I don't have something to stop Devour Host from rapid healing, I'm just going to have to deal with this. I'm not really, I think, now Jake, when he lived back in this area, him and I would always talk about how you can't plan for a tournament based on what's out there right now, because you never know how it's going to change through dynamic updates. You never know if something new is going to come out, and you just may never end up playing that. So you've now just teched for a particular list, and you might not have had to play it at all one time that entire weekend. And I think that's kind of where I look at it more when you start thinking about the meta, is you should really, I guess, more so focus on what you know and how you play that. You might run into a bad match of them, but you then know what you can do and how you can come out of it. And I'll, I guess, say this again. I know going into for Masters, the semis was against the Infernal player again. He dropped his other list with two Griever Swarms, two or three Foreboders, to where he could get Black Spot off wherever. I'm like, well, my defense of 12 is already not going to matter to him. He's just going to keep shooting. But hey, he doesn't have a way to really deal with my armor right now. So I can, after he soaks up the fire here, I can then just push into him and keep him from getting to scenario. And then bottom of two, maybe top of three. I then went up 4 points on scenario on him. And it was then very hard pressed for him to get. Right. In fact, the game ended on his turn with me winning 6-1.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess if that answered it or not, I guess.
Well, let me rephrase.
I'm sorry.
Let me rephrase, I guess, one of his questions. So you mentioned that you and Jake would say that you can't really plan for what's presently dominant. And you mentioned Infernals is something that's up and coming. What do you see as trends that are taking place, or things that you're seeing players do, or things that are becoming more popular?
One thing I've started to see a lot is, this is, I guess, a habit I still have from Mark One with trying to keep your unit commander, not the officer, but your basic leader that comes with the unit, trying to keep them safe near the back, because of Mark One, if you lost them, that unit couldn't give or receive orders anymore. Where now I see a lot of people who have units that have Vengeance or something else, to where they'll purposely put their unit commander or the leader out in the front and leave a couple models back, so that way when he dies, like, oh, well, these two that are now safe are back in formation, which is a really good tactic. And it's something I just have started to see a lot, especially with units that have Vengeance. I've been seeing that a lot more. And I guess a couple other trends I'm starting to see is where you have this just trying to go for high armor or high volume of attacks through infantry.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what I was seeing at Gen Con recently.
Right, right.
Or three or four cockatrices for every Grimkin player.
Sure. So this is a follow-up question from Cutter again, and this is talking again about trends that we see happening within the game. And he says, taking into account upcoming releases, the response cycle to top-tier predators and lists, and the evolution of lists in 2019, what sort of trends do you think you'll see developing because of those things? I guess let me ask them one at a time. So, for example, how do you see lists changing or adapting with Steamroller 2019?
Really, I think we're going to start seeing the value of ambush units.
Yeah.
Now, not at Gen Con, I didn't have any, but I know I always see either say whatever this year's DICON, Miniature Madness, Privateer Weekend, whichever one. I know AK ran out at Game Night Store for that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I had in every one of my lists one unit that could ambush. And whenever it became one of those scenarios that was really pushed off to the sides, that one unit made up well for its points.
Right.
Always did something, whether it was, all right, well, it's bottom of two, I can now move into this area. He's already trying to make sure he contests his own rectangle zone, but now this unit can deal with whatever's there on top of possibly help get rid of the objective. And then I just have to run one of my light Crick's Jacks into it. Now I'm able to score 2 points easily that turn just because of the one ambush unit. So I think ambush is going to start really, or at least should,
right,
start
right.
picking up in this.
It seems like having some part of your force that is, I agree with ambush, but also if there are parts of your force that can be effective that are autonomous to your warcaster or warlock, that also has value. Where there's that's some scenarios where you're potentially
whining.
What do you see as, out of the upcoming releases, what do you see as ones that are particularly impactful or exciting?
For me, exciting would be, now I'm going to say it wrong, but James, the female Iron Maiden. Because I did play the original Witchfire trilogy, so when that model, not the James, but when an Iron Maiden was in there, that kind of always made me like super excited for that, especially whenever I did the role play for the school that I work at. I do a D&D session for them once a week, and they always liked every year I've done it. I also think the model's just good in general, based on what I can do. But I think you're going to start seeing for impact. Again, I think I'm going to have to go and steal your answer with the autonomy of when you have a unit or solo that can just function on its own. So at least that way it can be off to the far flank, either contesting or scoring, while you need maybe a low focus or low Fury Warcaster or Warlock and its battle group to focus over here.
Kind of a follow-up question to piggyback off of this. You got a little bit of experience playing versus Infernals this weekend, and you've been working on the faction for yourself as well. But how big of a impact do you think they're going to make on the competitive scene? And I guess what's kind of your opinion of that faction's once they start having most of their tools available?
I think the first thing that's going to come up will be the idea that people really don't know what they can do or how they can function yet. So there's going to be that little aspect to them where, how do I deal with this when I haven't, maybe have not seen it as much.
Right, yeah.
I know with a lot of the terrain that we saw at Gen Con, when a Desolator was getting summoned in, and here's now this maybe 3-inch to 3.5-inch gap between these two forests, or this cloud and this forest. Now when it gets summoned right down there and it's completely blocked all line of sight.
Right.
For them, when you see that, that was kind of like, oh, so you think, well, maybe I have to start teching with eyeless sight in that. But again, that goes back to another question that we had earlier, but I think it's just with them, it's just going to be the idea of waiting to see what they can fully do before everything else. While at the same time, I think their big thing is going to just be the attrition, because you might be losing a solo here and there when you start summoning. But again, if you keep summoning the right one, their master might never be seen, might never be able to actually attack them, especially with the Umbral solos there being able to just pretty much pop out and take two hits. Those things don't die from what I was playing against, even with quality shots, too quickly or easily.
Yeah, it can be a sad day if you, especially if like they pop out and you boost damage and you fail to kill, and then they get their shield guard off, then that's pretty good value for the Infernals player.
Well, the value also increases because normally, or at least until the Princess is released, that's usually maybe one of your free solos or your free requisition, because, well, it's the most expensive piece anyways.
Right, yeah. Going on to his next question, when you are in your list selection process and you're trying to decide what list to take, and you're potentially in somewhat of a list chicken situation, how big of a factor do things like scenario and terrain play in what you're picking versus the opponent's list pairing?
So I guess the first thing I look at when it comes to it, I guess, would be the scenario. Because I know, all right, so one of the games this last weekend would have been, man, I really want to drop my Kreos list, but we are in Anarchy right now, and this list with about 8 to 10 entries total will not be able to start, it'll have to spread out too much to even contest or not lose that scenario.
Right.
I think scenario is the first thing I look at. And then when I see what their lists are maybe able to do to interact with the scenario and the terrain, then that's what I think of next on how I'm going to pick it. I mean, I think, of course, I didn't want to ever Kreos into that Infernal person, because I'm like, well, we'll just be able to shield guard a bunch of stuff. Yes, steady. This is just going to be silly if I do this at this point.
Right.
So I think I kind of just look to see what my weakness is going to be for my list versus them. And then, hey, if both my lists are pretty bad, then I just go, well, which one's just not going to lose that scenario real quick?
Okay, so For the last question, I'll ask the question and then probably we can go through your list and then we can repeat the question. But he says, what part of Thyra's toolkit felt essential when comparing to a different caster like Severius or Sirenia? And so real quick, can you go ahead and go through the list that you played?
All right. So, and I know I sent you an email to kind of correct what you had up on the site, right?
Yeah.
All right. So I know there was Thyra, Blood of Martyrs, a Reckoner, Hierophant. There was an Exemplar, Seneschal, and the Knight's Exemplar one, one with two swords, Exemplar, Errant, Seneschal, an Exemplar Warder, Elias Gade, Gravis, Severius Zero with Fire Salvation, one Mechanic, one Rack, minimum unit of Fire, full Errants with their UA, and a unit of Knights Exemplar and their UA. And then, would you be able to repeat the question you were saying after that? Or?
Yep. So, he said, what part of Thyra's toolkit felt essential when comparing to a different caster like Severius or Sirenia?
Oh, I think I'd want to go with her for Carnage, and of course now, forgetting the name of it, but her one that gives +2 strength and takedown. I know, I studied so much of these lists that I can read them off to you, right? In fact, I can't even remember the name of the spell, says a lot. But those were the two spells I really started thinking about when I put in there, just like, all right, well, you have Errants, they're going to be the front line. He has a lot of shooting. They can be occultated and get occultation. If they're about to get thrown into the mix, then I can give them a strength buff. So now they're Pal 11 weapon masters. Sirenia, to me, she just didn't have that outside of. So she has that with the bonus to hit and damage because of positive charge. But now I have to cast the spell as well as focus on the placement of this other model, where if I just want Errants, you just need to get a bonus to damage. Here's the spell. Just go off to the races as Gravis desperate pastes you. So I think that's kind of why I thought her over that. And then the weird aspect, I kind of thought, well, I'm going to play Sirenia for champions. I don't feel like playing her all day for Masters qualifier. So that really came down to I don't feel like playing this list multiple days in a row. And in all actuality, that's kind of why I took 4 different lists, the Gen Guns. I'm like, right. I get bored after one day of playing these. I probably won't play my Protectorate now for a long time other than Warriors of the Old Faith. That's just because I'm like, cool, Midnight Archon, new hotness with Cav models. Got to get these games in first, and then I'll be done with you for a while.
Yeah.
By new hotness, I mean more like my new models with the flaming wings.
They are pretty cool sculpts. I'm a little bit concerned about transporting the Archons, but
literally the first thing we kept saying at Gen Con.
Yeah, it's true.
So was there another part of his question that I didn't answer, or I've ADD'd off from?
He mentioned specifically why you didn't pick Severius or Sirenia. Did you have any thoughts on those casters?
I mean, it's sad that you can say Severius over the fact of a 16-inch bubble with a couple good spells over. If I'm just, I guess for Severius, I'm wanting to go with his little version because it's cheaper. I don't have to build my army around him. It's kind of sad that a junior almost does, based on where you position him, the same thing as the normal Warcaster version of him. But when it came to Sirenia, it was just... I know he's probably not going to like this answer, but it really came down to I played Sirenia around the time she first came out, and then I haven't played her since. So I was like, well, it's champions. I guess I'll take Sirenia. The list I want to build for her is kind of similar to my Thyra one, so I won't have to pack as many different models, so I can take to Gen Con one case to carry everything in.
Right, yeah. I know those feelings.
I mean, you can look at the lists and see that they have very... I mean, I would at least think that they look different enough. So, I mean, instead of one Exemplar Knight, Seneschal, Sirenia had 2. She has Fire and Sanctifier. There's no Severus Zero. There's Exemplar Incinerators. 2 units of the Knight's Exemplar instead of 1. I mean, it's almost like a sideway move, but I mean, there's a little bit of difference here and there.
So, one of the things that came out at Gen Con was the Oblivion box set. What were some of the things that you were most excited about with the Theme Force remix?
So the big one that a couple of us, when we were in our rooms, of course, reading the books, even though you've already seeing the updates on War Room and that. So Theme Force wise, my excitement, I think, was, or at least I was saying, I mean, I thought Thornfall Alliance got, I think they got the best Theme Force in regards to what I believe Privateer had said, or they were trying to get across with this whole new Theme Force remix. The idea that you can play a Warjack or Warbeast heavy style battle group in this Theme Force, you don't have to worry about taking certain things to get the free stuff. Or if you want to do a infantry heavy theme or army, you can do that and still get these other benefits. Mm-hmm. And for me, Thornfall, I think it felt, and when we were discussing this room, it came to, yeah, everyone agreed that their Theme Force, I think, embodied the best aspect of that. Because, all right, so your Warbeasts get a benefit. Your Warriors get a benefit. So if you want, you can do a whole Warbeast heavy battle group, and they all still get this option or this ability of salvage. In which case, you might not get it to ever use it, because you might be fighting a Horde's army. But at least when you were building your list, you did have an aspect of what they were trying to say of, you can do a war or a battle group heavy theme force or army in this theme force. And if you want to do all wars, hey, they all have rise now. So I think that was the big excitement for me when I saw them. That, and of course, just the idea of like other ones, Jaws of the Wolf, their Warjacks game Pathfinder. I'm like, hey, this is another awesome theme for Warjacks. And then, of course, I was more into, instead of looking at the theme forces when we're in the room trying to wind out for now, I'm reading all the fluff at the beginning of the book, mm-hmm. and all that. So still making my way through that.
Yeah. I guess this is kind of branching out of some conversations from Chain Attack and some other meta conversations, but I'm kind of curious your opinion of the magnum opus theme of Crucible Guard. Because you had kind of talked about the minions theme, but it just seems kind of weird to me that there's basically, it kind of feels like the old regulars theme list out there, where it feels like you can take whatever you want and get good free models and get good theme force benefits. And it just seems kind of strange to me that that exists in the Theme Force world or universe. But I guess I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on that.
On that particular Theme Force?
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at it and see it didn't really change a whole lot.
Right, yeah.
Solos, yeah. Weapon Crew still kept the repo. Instead of the plus one, you get the reroll. The one that threw me for a little bit more of a loop was the two transfer solo option, where it started to become, before, all right, your only real 6-point free model in this was what? Hutchuck, if I'm correct on that before? I mean, he still is now, but that was,
right.
I think,
right, right.
Before it, you're only 6.1. Right. Now it's, oh, I get these two solos
right.
for free, which now equals 6 points.
Right.
And I guess, that Theme Force, I kind of look at it like, this is your base, this is your Crucible Guard. I can take whatever I want. I can play with whoever I like, even take a mercenary unit and solo. Compared to their other one, where you're like, all right, well, I get to upkeep my spells, or my upkeeps begin and play, and Vanguard Shield Guard twice, which means I feel like I kind of have to, in their other Theme Force,
yeah.
take Vanguards if I want any benefit.
Right.
The other one, I just guess felt it, like, sorry, go ahead.
I guess it, in a way, as I think about it a little bit, I guess, as I've been thinking about this talking with you, is that one of the things that I believe the designers have said is that one of the purposes of the Theme Forces is try to make the game balancing a little bit easier and make it so that you're going to have segments of a faction that you see playing with each other, and you don't necessarily see like these unlimited amount of combinations or broken combos or whatever. But with Crucible Guard and Infernals, you have these theme lists where you can basically take whatever in the faction, but I guess it doesn't necessarily need to be broken down into those smaller segments, because they're already fairly small segments within those mini factions. And so I guess I can sort of see why they've felt okay going with that approach.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, how many times were we told, what was it, Convergence is a limited faction, and you're not going to hardly see anything for them, and to me, sure. I was like, all right, I agree with that. I can see that. People complain about a year or two later. Well, they already warned you. The thing that got me was, okay, Grimm can come out. So this one's just going to be a new faction. So why, I know you already said the other one's limited. Why did this one that just came out have to be not limited? And now how many new things you got for them within the past year?
Right, right.
And then we can count on one hand how many Convergence got. I mean, Crucible Guard just came out. Well, not just, but recent enough to where you wouldn't think too many new things are going to come out outside of how many mercenaries that time now have come out
being right, able yeah. to work for. Well, I mean, we do know that the next wave of models after Oblivion is going to be Crucible Guard. Or, sorry, not Crucible Guard, Convergence. So
I can't forget Riot Quest Wave 2, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be lots of waves of
Riot Quest. I was going to say, because I keep looking at the back as I look to paint them, like, Starter, Wave 1. I'm like, oh, can't wait to see what comes out in Wave 2 now.
Well, I think that's going to be a good stopping point for this first episode. In our next episodes, we will probably talk some more about the Theme Force Remix. We'll talk about tips for winning with Protectorate, ways to beat Protectorate if you're playing against them, and other topics like that. As always, the meta is sponsored by Discount Games Inc. You can email me at j@discountgamesinc.com for information on how you can receive even better savings on War Machine products than what we have listed on our website. So Chuck, thank you very much for being on this episode.
Oh, thank you.
And I look forward to continuing things here shortly. Yep. And thank you for listening, and thank you everyone who has backed us on Patreon.